Chapter 10 Passion. In verses 17 to 20 of the 13th book, Hermes says, "Consequently, the things of the Spirit are undivided, and the Spirit, which rules over all things and is the soul of God, is capable of doing whatever it wills." Consider these things and relate what I said just now to the question you asked me earlier about fate and the soul. If you now put aside all contention over words, you will find, my son, that the Spirit, the soul of God, truly has dominion over everything, over fate, over the law, and over everything else, and that nothing is impossible for it. It is able to exalt the human soul above fate, but equally to subject it to fate if it has fallen into error. Behold the sublime words spoken by the good demon, Tat. These are divine, true, and enlightening words, Father. But may I ask you to explain the following as well? You said that in beings devoid of reason, the soul acts in keeping with their disposition and inclinations. Now I suppose that passion, pathos, is the inclination of beings devoid of reason. If the soul cooperates with the inclinations and the latter are passions, is then the soul also a passion, since it is affected by pathos? Hermes, very good, my son. Your question is discerning, and it is fair that I should answer it. Everything incorporeal in a body is subject to pathos, passion, suffering, and, strictly speaking, is itself passion, pathos. Whatever gives rise to movement is incorporeal. Whatever is moved is a body. The incorporeal is also moved, and that by the soul, and this movement too, is passion, pathos. So both that which causes movement and that which is moved are subject to suffering, pathos. The one because it imposes movement, the other because it is subjected to the impulse of motion. If, however, the soul disengages itself from the body, it also frees itself from suffering, pathos, passion. It may be better to say, my son, that nothing is without pathos, suffering, but that everything is subject to it. Pathos, suffering, is not the same as the experience of pathos. The former is active, the latter passive. Bodies, too, are active of themselves. They are either motionless or being moved. In both cases, there is pathos. The incorporeal is forever being urged to action and is therefore subject to suffering. So do not let yourself be misled by words. Active power and pathos, suffering, are one and the same. But there is nothing against using the purest, most favorable name for it. As you will have noticed, these texts are all about passion. Pathos, the term for passion used in the Greek text, refers both to suffering in general and to the suffering of the soul in particular, as well as to the suffering caused by lust, by passion. Tat asks his master Hermes for information about these things, in view of his statement that in beings without reason, the soul works in accordance with their instincts. And Tat goes on to say, "I thought that the instinct of beings devoid of reason is passion. So is the soul too a passion?" In reply, Hermes points out that all activities taking place in a body, and hence all those activities set in motion by the state of the soul, are passion. It is necessary for you to form a clear concept of this. All human bodies are moved by a soul state and stand at the center of a microcosm. In some cases, the microcosm is all ready, considerably developed, and of a high quality. In other cases, as is the situation with life sparks, there is no microcosm but only an elementary astral principle. But whatever the case, in every microcosm and in every astral principle, be it of life spark entities or animals, there is a nucleus. From this nucleus, a radiation emanates aimed at the heart of the creature concerned, and causing a movement, a certain disposition within it. So first, there is the nucleus with its radiation, referred to here as soul state. The radiation of the nucleus ensouls the heart of the creature, which in turn is bound to react to that ensoulment. So there is an immaterial movement, a radiation emanating from the nucleus of the microcosm, and there is something which is being moved, be it the body, the personality. In animals, the radiation of the nucleus does not meet any obstruction in the heart, and the radiation emanating from the heart does not encounter any obstruction in the body. That is why animals behave like others of their species. With human beings, however, the situation is quite different. On entering the human heart, the radiation of the nucleus always encounters obstructions, which often are considerable. In many cases, the radiation of the nucleus cannot even enter the heart at all. It is then as if the heart has become petrified, barren, empty, fat. And should it come about that after a very long time, something of the radiation of the nucleus is able to enter the heart and later, via the heart, the personality, then a great conflict will arise, the great conflict and suffering of pupilship. It is perhaps necessary to explain all this in more detail. The body, the personality, has a life of its own. The vital consciousness that dwells in every personality is a purely atomic consciousness, which, in dialectical human beings, is always in conflict with the radiation of his microcosmic nucleus. The dialectical personality is no longer an ideal personality. It is crystallized, and through its crystallization, it has degenerated. Various organs have become latent, and other organs have been added to enable the human being to manifest himself in the gross material state. As a result of this densification, the human heart has also degenerated. Its seven centers have closed up, and indeed have never been open in the vast majority of human beings. Such individuals are therefore no longer motivated by the radiation of the nucleus, but only by the nature consciousness. When Hermes calls people in this condition animals, he is in fact being too optimistic. The many millions of people whose hearts are closed in this way are in reality sub-animal, or at any rate, no longer human, in the true sense of the word. They are creatures of orthades. It is this terrible reality that the Gnosis takes as its starting point. For every personality that enters a microcosm as a result of birth in nature represents a possibility of restoring that microcosm to its original state. In theory, this possibility exists, but what will become of it in practice remains to be seen. Now we have to present a truth some may find horrifying. In our era, many great powers of the universal chain are engaged in stimulating every microcosm to intense activity, and the majority of living mankind is experiencing the results of the radiation of the rose in the heart. The human heart is being broken into, as it were. Entrance is being forced, if at all possible, and, incidentally, this is giving rise to many illnesses. Why all this activity? Why all this intense effort? Because if such a forced entry is not successful, there will no longer be any possibility of rescue, and, excluded from any regenerating impulse, life will just continue without any sense and without any reason until death comes. One might now ask, do the great powers of the universal chain you mentioned just now suppose that forcing the heart will have a liberating effect on the radiation of the microcosmic nucleus? Our answer is, look at the results of such forcing and the corresponding facts and phenomena in our society. Hermes says in verse 19, whatever gives rise to movement is incorporeal. Whatever is moved is a body. The incorporeal is also moved, and that by the soul, and this movement too is passion, pathos. So both are subject to suffering, pathos. When a human heart is forced open by the microcosmic radiation, the rose of the heart, and the light makes itself known in the personality as a radiance of the soul, then a fierce conflict will arise between the desolate personality with its sources of nourishment and the soul. Both will consequently experience intense pain as a result of the conflict. the grief of the soul because it is unable to arouse the slightest harmony in the personality, but causes and experiences only disharmony there. And the grief of the personality because the soul's influence is so contrary to its nature that it is thrown completely off balance, causing all kinds of problems such as physical illnesses, but also moral defects of various kinds, overwhelming passions, sexual abnormalities, and various forms of criminal behavior. The cause of this conflict situation is easy to imagine. It lies in the clash between the personality, which is entirely of the earth-earthly, and the rose radiation. It may, however, be more difficult to see how this can lead to such things as criminal behavior and moral abnormalities. Imagine a personality with, for instance, a good, humane disposition combined with a powerfully eye-central consciousness. Astrologers would speak of a Jupiter influence, expressing itself in a strong urge towards delusory goodness. Now imagine that this person undergoes the radiation of the nucleus in the heart without being prepared for it in any way. In this way, the delusion will be strengthened and often driven to tremendous excesses. If the person concerned is strongly intellectual, the radiation of the nucleus to which he is exposed may give rise to serious dishonesty as the result of a negative reaction. If the emotional being with a strong negative Mars influence rules the body, then the radiation of the nucleus may often cause moral defects. All kinds of passions can develop in this way. This may also account for the attempts of some pupils to bring the school into line with nature. And now you may ask again, how can all this lead to anything useful? How crazy to drive someone into all this conflict, even though they are not capable of reacting positively? Well, if you look at the waves of delinquency and degeneration raging throughout the world, if you observe the peculiar behavior patterns of human beings who appear to have broken loose from all control and restraint, you will at the very least have to conclude that humanity is creating some very heavy karma for itself at the moment. And that, however paradoxical it may sound, is a great blessing, the only blessing, apparently, to which the majority of mankind is still susceptible. Often the only result is conflict in suffering and sorrow in a nameless woe. These experiences full of bitterness are etched so deeply into the auric being that from that moment on, the microcosms concerned are marked. And that brings with it the tremendous possibility that in a future revivification of the microcosm, the heavy karma in the auric sphere will prepare the new personality in an entirely new way. For the past suffering will then have a powerful influence on the archeus, the endocrine system, and the blood, and will open the heart to a certain extent. As a result, there will be less opportunity for the conflict we have just described to arise, or, if it does, its consequences will be much less serious. In very many cases, the suffering experienced in the past will make the person concerned strong enough to attempt a serious reaction to the radiations of the original soul. In these cases, there is a strong chance that if pupilship is undertaken, it will be possible to bring it to a good end. The work the Universal Brotherhood does with human beings sometimes has extremely long-term aims. With God, 1,000 years are as one day. We are not saying all this because we are happy about criminal behavior and immorality, but because there is a passion life and a passion death. The first is a victory of the light. The second will one day become a victory of the light, albeit via a path of immense suffering. And the passion we need to be moved by as those who wish to serve God and mankind is that of intense compassion for all those who are being taken through the depths so that one day they might experience the dawn of their new morning.